It's time for JT the Brick.
This is a new day. It's a new chapter. It's a new era. It's a new mindset.
Jacoby Myers in motion. O'Connell takes the snap, throws it out to him. He's going to throw to the end zone. Touchdown, Devontae!
I love hearing that sound.
You know, I thought at the end of the year it was nice. Allegiant Stadium started to turn into a home field advantage. You could hear the roar of the crowd.
Well, to me, it's not just unconventional. It's the right way, and it's our way.
Vegas is the global hub of the Raider Nation. Now it's got to act that way every home game.
Raider Nation, as I always say, you know, you show up and we'll show out.
JT the Brick.
It's a real thing. It's a tangible thing. You get in the building and you feel it.
It's a war to track down Kansas City. I've always been a big fan of running the football.
Hand up to Zamir. Cuts to the right side. First down, 35. First 40. Down the 50. Near side, 40. 35, 30. And Zamir White might have just salted away a Raiders win.
I'm always looking for opportunities to compete, man. And this is a great one here.
And now,
Raider Nation unite.
Here's JT the Brick.
Out of the gate. Good to be here today on the first day. Post-Memorial Day, short week here on the flagship of the Silver and Black, Raider Nation Radio, and we are streaming live on YouTube. If I don't tell you that, then you know you can't watch the show. If I tell you it, you can go to YouTube right now and jump into the show at JT the Brick YT and do that. So I like that. I like the fact that you can see the show. You could be inside the show. We start 10 minutes earlier or 5 minutes earlier. Everybody says hello. It's a live chat. A lot of people are doing this, and I like to see this. I like to think people are listening to me on radio. I'm one of those guys, I got to know people are listening. And we've never in the history of radio, since Marconi invented it, we never know who's listening. People say, well, we have this and that. No one knows. No one knows if you're listening or not. The only way I know if you're listening is if you're sounding off like you got a pair, you're calling me, you're tweeting, you're in the YouTube chat, and you're waving, and I can see you or hear from you. So you're always welcome to join in on any of the multiple platforms. That's a big word we use now. Platforms that we have. And YouTube is the latest one, and also on the Raiders mobile app as we open up the show. With a heavy heart today, we say goodbye to Bill Walton. Bill Walton, who was more than just an acquaintance to me. I'm not going to jump out and say he was a great friend. He wasn't, but we knew each other on a first-name basis. He appeared on my shows many times. I've seen him live multiple times at events, especially the Pac-12 for basketball. I've been at dead shows where he's been at, but never seeing him other than seeing him in the crowd, not going up there. And then I emceed two events that Bill Walton was the guest speaker. And that's how we got to know each other. And that's the focus of the monologue. Brought to you by Golden Entertainment. They own the Strat. PT's fuels the monologue. Best happy hour in town, 5 to 7, midnight to 2. What I'd like to do today is tell some Bill Walton stories, because I don't run away from death. A lot of radio hosts don't do death, in quotes. Well, I don't encourage people to talk about death. I don't wake up every day and try to put death into my monologue, into my show. But when a legend dies, who I know and you know of, I think it's worth more than one segment. I think it's worth more than the bottom of the hour update guy or gal saying, oh, and earlier today, Bill Walton died at the age of 71. And then the host doesn't mention it for an hour. That happens all the time. It drives me nuts. So I knew Bill Walton. I liked him a lot. I loved his energy. I loved his music. I think the music is real high on my list, Tim. I think he's the greatest, greatest college basketball player to ever live. Yeah. Do you know that Bill Walton, I read today and a friend told me, when he was at Helix High, Helix High had some pretty big alumni, Alex Smith, the quarterback, Reggie Bush. Bill Walton was their greatest alumni at Helix High. He won his last 48, it might have been 49, but I think 48 high school games. And then he won his next 88 college basketball games. Let that sink in. From the time he was a junior in high school to a senior at UCLA, didn't lose a game. Let that sink in. Everybody says, Bill, you know, if you look at Bill Russell, the greatest champion of all time, yes, with 13 titles, 11 in the NBA, and the two when he had the Olympic gold medals and what he did in college. Right, he had two with the San Francisco Dons. You add up all that. But Bill Walton had the longest winning streak in sports, if you go high school to major D1. So he was a winner. He was also a stutterer, and he had a speech impediment. And if you looked at his documentary that they aired again in three parts last night on ESPN, I think that was one of his greatest achievements, is he was shy. He was a stutterer. He didn't want to speak in public, and he overcame that to become a great broadcaster. He's really good. And the reason why he was a good broadcaster was he was very authentic. You knew where he stood. He was a happy guy. He was high energy. He brought great energy to every broadcast. And he made sure, if he wasn't the best, he tried to be the best. He woke up and said every day, I want to make it great. That was a great compliment. He said, every day I wanted to make great. So this is a guy who didn't wake up many days if it was in a teepee, if it was in Egypt seeing the Grateful Dead, if it was on the road in Bristol, Connecticut, if he was in at Oregon calling a Pac-12 basketball game. The guy woke up with such energy to improve everyone's lives. I don't know many people who's been stopped more for a selfie than Bill Walton because he's 6'11". So when he walks into a room, he can't hide. So everybody sees him and goes, oh my God, that's Bill Walton. They take a picture. And every picture you've seen here in the last 24 hours or so is him smiling and taking a picture and really happy to be with the people who he was with. That's tremendous. It's tremendous. He had a big impact on a lot of people's lives. And I think his life pre-college, high school, college, then the pros. I mean, a guy had big injuries. Whenever you're that tall and you're big, if you're a big human being, you're going to have big medical injuries and medical issues. Most do. He had foot problems. His feet couldn't bear the weight and the size of his athleticism. So he would have bone spurs and he had injuries to his feet that they couldn't diagnose. Think of that. He's playing with the Portland Trailblazers, number one pick overall, and fans were questioning him in Portland as an MVP of the league and an NBA champion because he couldn't play. He was on the bench with a cast, and the doctors are saying, wait a second, we don't see a break. We don't see what's going on. His body could not hold up. And a week earlier, we lost Jim Otto, and Jim Otto just had his beautiful service. And Jim Otto, think of all the pain and suffering that Jim Otto went through and Bill Walton went through, right? Two of the greats of all time in regards to being passionate about this sport, even when they were fighting through pain, which is a big topic I always bring up in sports. It is a really big topic that I think is important, playing through pain. Walton did it his whole life. And then Walton won a championship on the back end with Bobby's 86 Celtics. He was the sixth man of the year. This guy was no joke. He wasn't at the end of the bench. Bill Walton was the sixth man of the year on arguably the greatest Celtics team, one of the greatest Celtics teams of all time. Best friends with Larry Bird. Lionel Hollins, I spoke to yesterday, one of the greats, former coach and player. I had a conversation with him. I'm going to replay that in hour number two. It was one of his best friends. I was on the air yesterday. So pretty heavy what happened yesterday. So I got my parents in town. They've been here. They're staying for 10, 12 days. And it's Memorial Day, and yesterday was my 28-year anniversary on the radio. So I started Memorial Day 1996 on Sports Fan Radio Network here in Vegas. You know, I did a couple of local shows when I won the Smack Off, started in radio. But my first ever show with my name on it, because they were giving me weekend overnights and this, they were trying me out on Sports Fan Radio, and then I started on Memorial Day. They gave me my own show, the JT the Brick Show, Memorial Day, 1996, and I've worked 28 Memorial Days in a row. Now, that is not a pat on the back thing. A lot of people don't want to work Memorial Day. Why would you want to work a holiday? I do, because it's my anniversary. So that is a streak, Bobby, that will never be broken, and I don't need a column written by a consultant about that, but no one in the history of radio before or after will ever work 28 Memorial Days in a row. I promise you that is a record that, Bobby, will never be broken. No one will go 28 Memorial Days in a row. I promise you. I promise you that'll never happen. So I'm preparing for the show yesterday, and Bill Walton dies. But I wasn't preparing for that because I didn't get it until I hit the air. So I can chew gum and talk at the same time, even though I don't. I can do a couple of things, but I'm doing my monologue yesterday, and it's like 18 minutes past the hour, and I look down, and I see Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN, blue check mark, and Shams Charania saying that Bill Walton died. So I went with it. Normally when you talk death on the radio, you better not get it wrong. You better not get it wrong. I was told first that Art Shell died because Gene Upshaw died. When Gene Upshaw passed away, I did his golf tournament every year. And I was told when he passed away, and I didn't go with it. I said, that's not my spot. When Jim Otto, you know, I wait for the Raiders to do that. But yesterday I'm on the air, and I was friends with Bill Walton. And when Bill Walton died, and it was confirmed by two or three people high up in the media, Adam Schefter, I went with it. And the next 2.5 hours, I did Bill Walton talk when I prepared for the Pacers and the Celtics and whatever I was going to talk about. And it really hit me hard. I went to the first commercial break in my home on Memorial Day, and I went outside to the living room, and my dad was there, my mom. And they're on their iPad and, you know, doing what 86-year-old people do, 85-year-old people, on their iPad, you know, watching a little news. And with a heavy heart, I told my dad, Bill Walton just died. And my dad looked at me and said, wow, what a gentleman. Because I emceed an event for Bill Walton over at Sierra Gold by the headquarters of PT's 12 years ago, 2012. And Bill Walton was promoting a vodka company at the time. So he met with me beforehand, and my dad was in town. And we sat in the back room, and he talked to my dad for about a half hour. Because my dad at that time knew more basketball than anybody I knew. He knew about Walton at UCLA. He knew about Walton at Portland. My dad was a Knicks fan in the 70s. So they had a great conversation. So when the event began, I got up off the podium. There's probably 150 people in the room. And I talked for a minute, and then I brought up Bill Walton. And the first thing that Bill Walton did, first thing, not talking about his tequila brand. It was a tequila brand. And he basically just said, hey, I just spent, you know, 20 minutes with JT's dad. And he pointed at my dad and said, stand up. And he goes, man, what a great conversation we had. And everybody in the room who didn't know either me or my dad looked around and like, wow, that was pretty cool. And then Walton went into this unbelievable speech about how passionate he was about this liquor. Right, probably business. He gets 1,000 of those coming at him. And then last night I was sitting down with one of my best friends who's a sports agent. And we were talking about Bill Walton. And he said all the times he booked Bill Walton for speeches, Bill Walton would insist a week before the speech he wanted to talk to the CEO of the company and the marketing team and the team. He insisted on it to get to learn about the company and get to learn about it. And then yesterday I'm texting back and forth with Roxy Bernstein, the great broadcaster who worked predominantly with Bill Walton in the Pac-12, and we were sharing stories, and I was basically, you know, reading about his great relationship with Bill Walton. So with Walton, I think it's very important to put into perspective the impact that an athlete can have on our lives. Again, brilliant. If you look at the Mount Rushmore, and that's a topic I'm going to throw out today. Okay, there's not a lot of Raider news today, so calm down. Okay, it's good. As my wife says, it's good. There's no drama. You know what I was doing last year at this time? Jimmy Garoppolo, Tyree Wilson's in a boot, blah, blah, blah. People going crazy. People screaming at me. Raiders sky is falling. We're good. We're good to talk about Bill Walton for a few more minutes. And for Bill, he had this amazing impact as an athlete at the highest level. So he's on the Mount Rushmore of college basketball. You cannot move him. So it's Lew Alcindor, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. It's Bill Walton. You cannot move them. Those are the two greatest college basketball players of all time, no debate. Then you can go Christian Laettner, who I would put Laettner on my Mount Rushmore. Christian Laettner is arguably the top four greatest college basketball player of all time. I don't know how you can't have that. You ever watch him play at Duke and what he did with his championships and finals MVPs? And then you go Oscar Robertson, you go Pete Maravich, you go down the list of the top 10 players. Bill Walton is secure as the greatest college basketball player to ever live, or 1A to Jabbar. That's pretty good, right? Then he went on and won two championships in the NBA. He's on the top 50 greatest players of all time, top 75 anniversary team, obviously top 100. So Walton is secure. But what Walton did, which I find very unique, is he peacefully protested. When he was on the campus of UCLA with John Wooden and he grew his hair out, and he wasn't going to shave, and he wasn't going to cut his hair. And John Wooden said, I'm sorry, you're gone. You're not going to play. And he got on his bicycle and went to the barber and cut his hair because John Wooden, the man who taught him how to tie his shoes correctly and helped him go on one of the greatest winning streaks in the history of sports, he respected John Wooden. But John Wooden also let him peacefully protest the Vietnam War and the ending of it on campus at UCLA, where Walton got arrested. We see a lot of college kids today protesting, and I'm not going to get political here, but there's a lot of kids protesting now that don't have the depth of the knowledge of Bill Walton and what he was doing and had at stake what Bill Walton had to lose it all when he was doing that at that time, where it was pretty chaotic in this country in the early 70s and what Bill Walton was protesting. So he peacefully protested. Then he went to the NBA, and it was a disappointing career, even though he's one of the best because of the injuries. But he won two chips. He won two rings. He was a six-man award. He was an MVP. He was a finals MVP. Checked every box there. But then he went on to broadcast. And I thought he was exceptional as a broadcaster because he was very authentic. And he had fun and he told you about his life and what his life meant and the Grateful Dead and his family and his grandkids and his kids. And he wore the tie-dye. And he had fun with Roxy Bernstein or Jay Billis or Dave Pasch, all the guys he worked with, and they all loved him. But then what else Walton did, because I knew it, because I knew him here in Vegas, when he would come to the Pac-12, he would come in here and he would walk around the city of Vegas. He'd go to certain restaurants, bars, favorite hangouts there, and he would interact with everybody until the game because he didn't want to sit in his room until 6 o'clock at night. He wanted to hit the streets in Vegas, and he loved Vegas. Came here a lot for concerts and big events and speaking engagements where he was really high up on the speaking tour. Remember, a guy who had a speech impediment. He was a stutterer and didn't talk in high school. So that's the beginning of what I want to say about Bill Walton. And I think the last time I saw him was 2 years ago at the Pac-12 championship that week, the Pac-12 basketball tournament. And I had a credential, and I walked down courtside, and I walked up to him, and he didn't have the headset on. I tapped him on the shoulder, and he stood up. JT, how are you? I said, Bill, great to see you. And we had a nice conversation, maybe for 30 seconds. I knew he was about to work, and I shook his hand and said goodbye. And I was walking away, had that big smile. Take care, JT. See you, Bill. And, you know, for me, that's emotional. I don't remember the last thing I said to Jim Otto, but I always saw Jim Otto. And whenever I saw Jim Otto, especially late in life, 84, 85, he just passed at 86, I always went up to him, got down on a knee and said, Jim, you're the best, or something about Jim, his wife Sally, because you never knew when you were going to see Jim again. You hoped he lived forever. But I wish I would have had an opportunity to say goodbye to Bill Walton. The only guy I've had an opportunity to say goodbye to consciously was Jim Brown. I saw Jim Brown at the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio, and I was able to go up to him. He was at the end of life. Everybody in the room knew he was going to pass, everyone. And I got a chance to sit down with him, whisper in his ear, thank him, shed a tear. And I had a really good conversation with over a short period of time for the impact that he had on my life. So for Bill Walton, I wanted to dedicate the entire monologue to his life. It had a big impact on my life as a broadcaster, a communicator, a sports fan. And as I was talking to Bobby before the show, the Grateful Dead. You know, I like a lot of music and I talk about it. He went to 1,000 Grateful Dead shows, man. Going to a Grateful Dead show ain't easy. You normally got to travel. You got to get there several hours early. The concert's 3 to 4 hours. And then afterwards, it takes an hour or two to get home. And Bill Walton did that his whole life. He went to raise awareness for the Grateful Dead and music in a peaceful environment with the Grateful Dead where he interacted with everybody at the show. You know, Bill Walton didn't go to a Grateful Dead show and hide up in a suite. He was Father Time. He put his hands up on the floor, like I have my hands up on YouTube. He had his hands up throughout the show. Wherever you were in the venue, all you had to do was look down to the 13th, 18th, 20th row, and there's Bill Walton, Big Red, at a concert. And that's really cool. Then Neil Young and all the other bands that he supported and artists that he supported. He was just fantastic. So I wanted to dedicate 20 minutes to Bill Walton today because he deserves more than that. And hopefully we can take a couple of calls on Bill Walton at 702-365-9200, because that's all I do on radio. I tell stories about sports. I don't do any cheeseburgers. Once a year, I do a movie review for the Oscars. We are a stick-to-sports show. And this is sports. This is Bill Walton. And it's a story time. And it's a quiet time in sports. And we just lost him and Jim Otto back-to-back. So Bill Walton wasn't a Raider, but he was around the Raider Nation a lot in the Bay Area with the Grateful Dead, with all the travel that he did and his connection to Vegas, the Bay Area, the birth of the Grateful Dead, and then his life as a broadcaster in the Pac-12, which is basically Southern California, UCLA, the entire Bay Area. A lot of my audience today knew Bill Walton. A lot of our listeners today had an interaction with Bill Walton. So I'd like to do that today, if you don't mind. And then I'll mix in some interviews. Jeff Sherman's coming up here in 30 minutes on the moving lines. Oh, the quick Raider topic as I open up the show. Again, there's big gambling news with the Raiders. Not them doing anything wrong, but the season win totals are out. So Jeff Sherman's coming on for that. And the Westgate, I think, has them at 7. So they're trending to think the Raiders can win 8, as the rest of the world thinks the Raiders are going to win 6. And we're going to have a gambling conversation, if you're a Raider fan, on that. 702-365-9200, Chris in West Oakland. Whenever he gets a chance, he's our leadoff hitter, and he's a power hitter. Go ahead, Chris.
Hey, JT. Again, as I said last week when we opened the show talking about Jim Otto, it just seems like way too many of these nowadays. But as we get older in life, I guess that's just the fact of life. But I'm glad you mentioned, and I do have a couple of interactions with Bill Walton that are pretty interesting. I'll finish my call with. But you're right about what you said. Out of the sadness of a death, one of the positive things that comes, somebody like Bill Walton, some of the younger generations that know him only as the goofy analyst, not the Mount Rushmore type player that he was, maybe they see some of the highlights, see some of the clips. I've had young kids actually talk about, I'm a coach at a junior college, JT. We'll talk about college basketball games. We'll be talking about Bill Walton. I've actually had players say he was a player. They had no idea of that. So maybe guys will see some of the highlights and some of the stuff that he did. And you're right about the Mount Rushmore. Look, I've always said it's Lou Alcindor, number one, Walton, number two. However, I will say this. Bill Walton is the only other player that can even enter the conversation as the greatest college player of all time. Mm-hmm. He was that good. I also agree with Leitner. When it comes to the fourth on the Mount Rushmore, there's a bunch of different guys you can put. But, again, Kareem and Walton are 1 and 1A. He was that good and that special. And even when he went on to the NBA, it's a shame that this guy played before the technology that maybe could have saved his career. Not only did they win the title in 77, JT, people forget. When he really got hurt, there was the downward spiral toward the end of his career and his career-long injuries. The Trailblazers were 50-10 and almost a lock to repeat when he got hurt and missed the rest of the season. He was so dominant, he still won the MVP that year, even though he missed the final 22 games of the season, and it's just such a shame. But I'm going to segue into that, JT. Give me a couple of quick minutes on this one. 1977, I'm camping at Howard Prairie Lake above Ashland, Oregon, where I eventually ended up going to college. Bill Walton used to go up there every year with a group. He called it a commune, 15 or 20 people to unwind after the season. It was probably 2 or 3 weeks, early June 1977, after they had beaten the Philadelphia 76ers. His group comes into the campground site right next to my parents and my sister and me. They had forgotten an axe. Bill Walton comes over and asks my dad, do you have an axe we could borrow? And sure, no problem in that. I go, hey, you're Bill Walton. He goes, and what might your name be, little man? I told him my name. Well, later on that afternoon, I'm down shooting baskets. It's rickety old hoop they had on the edge of the lake. Who comes riding down but Bill Walton? And if anybody that saw the 30 for 30, how this guy used to go across the street at the park and play with the local kids in the neighborhood knows this story is true. I'm shooting around. He goes, hey, little man, good to see you shooting the ball. He takes the time to play horse with me. I told him how I love Kareem and him. And how he was impressed that at 10 years old, all I knew about, you know, how much I knew about basketball. Well, fast forward to about 37 years later, JT, I'm at a Cal basketball game. And I had some pretty good connections and great seats. I'm at the Golden Bear Lounge a couple hours before the game. There's one other person in there who comes walking down the stairs but Bill Walton. I said, hey, he shook my hand. I brought up how I said, you wouldn't remember this man, but Howard Prairie Lake, you played basketball, you played horse with me. He broke into this huge grin. He goes, of course I remember. He goes, you're the only person in all the years I went to that lake that I ever saw shooting on that rickety little basket that if you missed the ball would roll into the lake. JT, for probably the next 20 minutes, we talked about the lake. It wasn't myself and Bill Walton. It was just another guy. I told him I had played ball at Southern Oregon. And anybody that knows Ashland, it's very much a Berkeley-esque type community with a college. Bill Walton was phenomenal. We didn't talk basketball. We talked about the lake. We talked about the town of Ashland. He was just phenomenal. Well, the story gets a little better. A year later, I'm at another Cal game, and the seats I had, because my friend had seats in the first row right behind the visitor bench. The national broadcast guy sat about 10 feet to my left. Well, it's Bill Walton, and I believe his partner that game was Roxy Bernstein. Halftime of the game, he gets up, comes over to me. He goes, hey, man, I forgot your name. He goes, Howard Prairie, man. He goes, just wanted to let you know. after our conversation last year, I went back up to the lake. I hadn't been up there in over 30 years, and I had a phenomenal time. He goes, you got to get back up there. Shook my hand, smiled. Again, he didn't know me from Adam a year ago, and he acted like he had known me all of his life. We talked about the lake again, talked about some of the stuff in college basketball, and that's my Bill Walton story. And anybody that's met him, he had that unique ability that even though he was one of the most famous people in the world, you could sit down next to him, and it was like talking to your next-door neighbor. There was no air of pretentiousness, none I'm better than you. He was just a great, classic, class human being. And I want to finish the call with this. In honor of Big Bill, I'm going to do what, and I also remember the cab site years ago, a funny smell. My dad said that's what's called wacky tobacco. We know Bill liked to indulge a little bit of that, but it's okay. I might light one up, JT, turn up Casey Jones of the Grateful Dead, and have a little tribute to Bill Walton here in my backyard. Rest in peace, Big Bill. You belong on the Mount Rushmore, and the world is a slightly worse place today than it was yesterday. Oh, finally, also this, JT, how ironic is this? That Bill Walton passed away literally the day after the final athletic event of his beloved Pac-12. And I'll say this one last time in honor of Big Bill, the Conference of Champions. Thanks for letting me give this memory. The world will miss this guy, JT.
Thanks,
man.
Chris. Later. I appreciate it. Always a good call. And, yeah, there's a lot of stories about Bill Walton. That was a cool one with the lake, tying it in, and him remembering people. You know, we all remember people. I'm not great with names, but I try to get better. When you remember a story of someone and someone remembers you and you can tie that together, that's a great moment. That's something you'll never forget. Bill Walton, the focus of our monologue as we open up the show, brought to you by the M Resort Spahn Casino, official hotel resort of the Silver and Black. The pool's open. Get outside. Celebrate. Concerts. Unbelievable drink specials. All there at the pool at the M Resort Spahn Casino. Jeff Sherman will join us, the VP of Risk Management over at the Westgate. On the Raiders and their over-under. This is important. It's time to get off the fence on this. You're either with the Raiders over or you're with the Raiders under. You'll get the moving line as the line has opened up. And even the Charger game is up at the Westgate. The opening game point spread is up. This is important. I want you to hear that. 702-365-9200 as we dedicate the show today to Bill Walton.
Derek Smith so far doing a pretty good job of denying defense on Larry Bird. Now they get Bird baseline. Back to Max. Reject Walton. Out of bounds. Celtic ball.
Walton read that all the way. Saw Maxwell cutting. Casey Jones. Here's Bird. Looks for Maxwell. And watch Walton come in from the right side of your screen. Maxwell sort of semi-wards him off. One, Celtics have to get ready and get into it.
Oh, Tommy Heinsohn there on the Celtics broadcast. Bobby, who runs the show, is a big Celtic fan. Celtics advance to the NBA Finals. We'll get into that next hour. I just saw this on Twitter about the night that Bill Walton won the NBA title with Larry Bird. Larry Bird put this out, and this was the night, the championship. He stayed up all night alone at Larry Bird's house. Bill came over. This is from Larry Bird. Bill came over. It was late. Doorbell rang, and Dinah answered, and she was like, "Hey, Bill, Larry's in bed." I heard him, so I got out, and I said, "Hey, Bill, I ain't doing this tonight. I can't." Bill goes, "Don't worry about it, Larry. I don't even need you. I'm just going to sit down here at the table." He had a bottle of whiskey, and he said, "I'll be here when you wake up." And when Bird woke up in the morning, Walton was still there at his Bird's kitchen table. What a story that is. We're talking about the life and legacy of Bill Walton, who passed away yesterday, and we'll get into some Raiders content here. Todd Dewey from the Las Vegas Review-Journal, who covers gaming and gambling. The column is, like the Raiders over, here's why it might not be a bad bet. And he goes on to write, the Raiders win total opened at 6.5 at Circus Sports, Station Sports, South Point, Caesars, Boyd Gaming, BetMGM. But the Westgate, Superbook, opened them at 7. Quote, most people had the Raiders 6.5. We went on the 7 side just because we think there's a better shot at 8 wins than 6. Superbook veteran NFL odds maker Ed Salmon said. Quote, we think the Raiders are farther ahead than they were last year at this time. To me, it's over or not. It's over or nothing. There's no way I'd look to bet the Raiders under. Well, I'm not a professional gambler, but I talk gambling with the best gamblers, some of them out there. That's the same opinion I've had at the Raiders. The Raiders are better than last year, where they won 8 games, should have won 9, the 3-0 shutout, but they didn't. They are what you are, what your record is. Bringing in Christian Wilkins and the experience of the team and the returning starters, I would assume the Raiders are going to be better than last year. But last year, the reason why people thought the Raiders could win was the addition of Jimmy Garoppolo. Because Jimmy Garoppolo, by many, including myself, we hoped he'd be healthy. And if he was healthy, he won 4 playoff games with the Niners. He could win regular season games. He's done that. And we all know what happened with Jimmy Garoppolo. The Raiders have also climbed to 7 at Caesars after the number sat at 6.5 over minus 160. They are 6.5 over minus 125 at the South Point. Todd Dewey goes on to write, the Raiders went 8-9 last season. They started 3-5 under former coach Josh McDaniels, but finished 5-4 under Antonio Pierce. Last I looked, Antonio Pierce is still the coach, and he had a winning record. So that's an interesting point that's going on here on the Raiders' win total. We'll talk to Jeff Sherman coming up from the Westgate, vice president momentarily. The Raiders are 3-1 underdogs at the Superbook to make the playoffs, and the plus 845 third choice to win the AFC West. So if you believe the Raiders can win the AFC West, a $100 bet will get you $845. That's a good number here. They're 100-1 long shots to win the Super Bowl, which isn't good because we want to win the Super Bowl around here. But here's what gets me going again. Here's what gets me going and frustrates me. He broke down, Todd Dewey, the AFC West. The Chiefs, 11.5 under 120. So the Chiefs' win total is 11.5. Are the minus 220 favorite to win the 8th straight division title. You got to bet $220 to win 100. That's how heavy favored the Chiefs are to win the West. They're also 6-1 second choice to win their third consecutive Super Bowl. Wow. 6-1 to win the Super Bowl. But how about this? The 5-win Los Angeles Chargers, their total is 9 wins under 130 with new coach Jim Harbaugh, and they're plus 325, second choice to win the division, and 30-1 to win the Super Bowl. So this is the greatest thing I'm going to tell you today. If you didn't read Todd Dewey in the Las Vegas Review-Journal, you're going to hear it from me. That the Raiders are 100-1 to win the Super Bowl, and the bleeping Chargers, the doormats of the AFC West, last place, 5 wins, are 30-1. The Broncos, 5.5 over, minus 130, are 20-1 long shots to win the division, and also 100-1 to win the Super Bowl. So the Chargers, who trailed the Raiders, the second-place team, and the third-place team, Denver, the Chargers, the propaganda minister of L.A., has the Chargers being winning 9 wins. That's their number. So they people, if you bet in the Chargers, you got to bet 10 if they're going to go over the total, and 30-1 on the Super Bowl. Has anybody met anyone on God's green earth that bet the Chargers to win a Super Bowl in your lifetime? Anybody? I'm dead serious. I'm not making this up. Do you know anybody on God's green earth when Stan Humphries was the quarterback or Philip Rivers? Do you know anybody who said, I'm going to the window? I'm going to park my money for the entire year and not get any return on it and bet the Chargers to win the Super Bowl? I don't. I know a lot of people. And that's what's going on. Propaganda today coming out of Los Angeles with the Chargers. It's just incredible. So those are your odds there. Quote, this is in the Todd Dewey column. Quote, Harbaugh is building the team the way he likes it. With a strong offensive line, run the ball, have a quarterback that doesn't make mistakes, play good defense. It just may take a while to get his team into the fold, Salmon said. The Chiefs are the Chiefs as long as Patrick Mahomes is there. But as each year goes by, they lose another guy or two on defense. And he goes on to write this about the Raiders. This is coming from an insider. The Raiders finished ninth in the NFL in scoring defense last year. That's pretty good. Top 10, they only gave up 19.5 points a game. Follow me. Raiders are giving up less than 20. Their defense got better, correct? Christian Wilkins was brought in. They got a better defense than last year, no debate. 19.5 points. Can the Raiders score 24 to 26 to 28? That's going to be the key to this year. He goes on to write, quote, "The Raiders fired McDaniels and Pierce came in. The attitude of the team changed." They said this, quote, "The Raiders don't have much in the quarterback department, but their defense certainly is going to be improved." Again, the Raiders don't have much in the quarterback department. Bobby, I'm going to screenshot this and I'm going to count every person who says the Raiders don't even have a quarterback. This was a little bit more respectful. The Raiders don't have much in the quarterback department. People don't believe that Gardner Minshew, who's won the same amount of games as Trevor Lawrence, can win in this league. And Aiden O'Connell, who won down the stretch and beat Kansas City in Kansas City and put up the all-time scoring record against the Chargers, is anything. They don't think they're anybody. They don't think they're average. They think they're nobody. Just remember that, Raider fans, if you want to get motivated. Jeff Sherman over at the Westgate. We'll talk to him in a little bit about the moving lines, the NBA Finals. I'm a Mavericks fan. I don't want the Celtics to win. I'm not a Celtic fan. I'm a Knicks fan. Celtics haven't had much to concern themselves with. The Timberwolves are at the Dallas Mavericks for Game 4. They look dead on arrival. I'll get into Carl Anthony Towns' performance later on next hour. JT, Raider Nation Radio. Playing a tribute to Bill Walton today, playing Grateful Dead, Walton's favorite band, and talking about his life and legacy. JT, back with you as we continue on. Brought to you by Modelo, the number one beer in America, proud partner of our show as we bring in Jeff Sherman, VP of Risk Management, over at the Westgate. So, Jeff, let's start with the Raiders' season win total, where you initially had it. Has it moved? Where does it stand today?
We opened 7 flat, and we're currently sitting there a little bit of under support. The market out there, there's a little bit of 6.5 over, so that's where you'll find the differences. But we actually like the Raiders a little bit than the rest of the market does, so we opened 7 flat on them.
Yeah, I've been reading that in the Review Journal in Todd Dewey's column. What did you like more about the Raiders when you dove deep and saw and set the number at 7?
Well, when we just look through their games, it starts with their defense, and the defense can keep them in games, as we saw when they played at Kansas City and they beat them, I believe on Christmas Day it was last year. But as long as you got the defense that can keep them in the games, you're going to have the point spreads a lot less, not so much double-digit point spreads, a lot more winnable games, manageable games. So, things have changed on the front for the Raiders, where they used to have a very porous defense. Now that's one of their strengths. So, we like that aspect and think that they can get over 6.5 games.
I see where the Chiefs are. I want you to explain, if you can, the Chargers and where you have the Chargers at now, because a lot of people don't think the team got better. They got a good offensive lineman in the first round. They got a better coach, but he's never coached a team. Why such a big move then up for the Chargers?
A lot of it with the coaching aspect. Mm-hmm. You see such a solid coach come in, and even if the talent isn't quite there, that they can change the culture, get the most out of their players. So we kept them hovering about what we used the previous seasons when they had the higher expectations, but we're at 9 under minus 130 on the Chargers right now.
All right, let's move to the NBA as the Celtics have advanced. And what are you showing tonight with the Mavericks and their ability to close this out against, I thought, a really good Minnesota team that was going to come into this series and win this series, and now they look like they could get swept?
Yeah, I'm surprised by how it's gone. And we did open for this game for Dallas minus 3, and it's down to 1.5. So the Timberwolves continue to get support. They saw a lot of support last game. They're seeing it again this game. So Dallas minus 1.5 this evening.
Jeff, I was fascinated watching Indy because they got swept in four, but three of the games they had the lead with under 90 seconds to go. And Tim Legler, a lot of people were talking about never seeing anything similar to that. How rare was that to see a team? And the Celtics are the better team and they advanced, no debate. But the fact that Indy had the ball with the lead in three of those games.
Yeah, it was crazy. And that's what I tweeted out last night, that it said it was 4-0, but it could have been 3-1 Indy, you know, very easily, but except for end of the game execution. And that's where, you know, a young team like that has to learn through it. But, you know, the Celtics, more veteran team, having been there and learned through it, and you see where they come out on top. But, you know, they haven't been ultra impressive. I mean, they had an easier path, had some opponent stars missing throughout their path to get where they are. But I think they're going to have a tougher go when they play the finals, likely Dallas, if not Minnesota.
Well, Jeff Sherman at Golf Odds is where to follow him, a must follow if you're out there. If you're going to go and just follow someone for great information at Golf Odds before we get to golf coming up here in a little bit. Liability on the Mavericks. I can't imagine that you had a bunch of tickets before the start of the season on the Mavericks to go the difference and win the title.
We actually did. We had took some money on them at 50-1, and they represent liability. We're in a real solid shape on the Celtics, Minnesota too, but Dallas, we do have some title liability.
Stanley Cup odds now to win the Cup. Where do we stand with the Final Four?
Yeah, ever-changing every day here. We have Dallas plus 150, the Rangers plus 270. Florida plus 350, and Edmonton coming off their loss last night plus 490.
Want to move on to the RBC Canadian Open. Here's Rory again as a heavy favorite. Then it drops off. I saw you put this out 20 hours ago. Rory 4-1, and then Thigala 18-1, Fleetwood 18-1, Lowry 20-1. And then I was looking down on the list here. I mean, there's only a certain amount of really elite players in this field here. Why is Rory such a heavy favorite?
Just as you mentioned there, it's not too strong of a field. You know, a lot of Canadians here in the 30-50-1 range have been playing well, and they're going to see a lot of support. But the way that Rory's playing, you know, he's only had the one win outside of the team event recently. But, you know, he's just such a wide gap between you don't have Scheffler ahead of him, some of the other top players, Speed last week, you know, not playing so well. But just the gap between him and the next golfer, Thigala, Fleetwood, creates such a difference in the odds.
Jeff Sherman, as we wrap it up, so Caitlin Clark came in. They're still 100-1. They're a really struggling women's basketball team in the WNBA. But the Aces at 11-10, Liberty 7-4. Tell us about the action that's coming in on the WNBA ever since Caitlin Clark came into the league and the handle.
Yeah, it's been picking up, and it's good to see on the games, on the futures. A lot of movement on the futures. Connecticut 14-1. Minnesota's made a large move. They were recently in the 30-1 range. They're down to 14-1, and the Aces play at Minnesota tomorrow, which should be a good game. We're seeing a lot of movement in the MVP odds, too. Asia Wilson holding strong at minus 110, but Nafisa Collier on Minnesota making a charge at 13-2.
Hey, Jeff, finally, you said individual games are up over at the Westgate. Raiders open up at the Chargers. Talked about the Chargers number being at 9, and I believe the Raiders, you had at 7 here. What's the number on the opening game as the Raiders travel to Los Angeles to SoFi?
Yeah, we opened the Chargers a 3.5-point favorite, and the market's sitting steady at that number, a total of 43.5 on that game. So that was one of the easier spreads for us to make, not too much movement there.
And 3 usually you get for being at home. Has anything changed with that, considering SoFi, Raider Nation coming in there? Is it typically 3 for the home team? Has that changed over the years?
It has changed, and now it's about 2.5 for the home team. That's pretty much what we waited. It used to be 3, like you mentioned, but not so much of a factor anymore, and we see a lot more visitors, you know, taking control. So 2.5 is pretty much what we waited at.
Always good to talk to you, Jeff. Thank you for your time.
All right, thanks, JT.
That's Jeff Sherman over at the Westgate. You're looking for the best experience at the best sports book in town, head on over to the Westgate. Ask for Jeff Sherman or Jay Cornegay over there. They're doing a tremendous job there. So Chargers open at home minus 3.5. Pretty much a pick 'em game. You get 3. He said 2.5. It's been a game where the Raiders and the Chargers are pretty evenly matched. But the Westgate, along with some other books in town, think that Jim Harbaugh walks on water. Jim Harbaugh is the difference. Last I looked, Antonio Pierce did a pretty good job as a head coach. Is Jim Harbaugh that much better than Antonio Pierce? He has much more experience as a head coach than Antonio Pierce, But Antonio Pierce has a pretty good staff around him, and I don't think the game plan is going to sit there and hurt the Raiders going into Los Angeles. The hype is there for the Chargers. If the Raiders can open up the season with a win at the Chargers, it's going to change everything. I'm treating it like a playoff game. I know from talking personally to the head coach, Antonio Pierce, he is out of his mind in a good way, ready for the invasion of L.A. I can tell you that. I gave you a little bit of that already. He is coming in hot for that game in L.A. Just telling you, get ready. And that's even before the Raiders train in Costa Mesa coming up, which I'm actually looking forward to. It's still nice. My parents have been out here almost 10 days. We haven't cracked over 100, I believe. Weather's been nice. No humidity. I think we're going over 100 this week, which is okay. And then we get to that point of no return, man, Bobby. It comes to June, July, August. Get out, get out, get out of here if you can. If not, get ready for that AC bill. If you do have a pool or can get to one, definitely get there. We're welcoming some of our new partners that are coming in for this year. The fifth year of the Raiders playing in Las Vegas as we continue to build here in Lotus Broadcasting with our proud partners of the show. We want to thank Raisin Cane's Chicken Fingers, One Love, the Buttery Texas Toast, the proud partnership with UNLV, the best chicken fingers in the world. No doubt about it. No one will debate that. Raisin Cane's Chicken Fingers, One Love. So next week I'm heading to Chicago to MC Mike Ditka's Gridiron Greats. Looking forward to that as several individuals get into that Hall of Fame. And then we have the Southern Nevada Sports Hall of Fame coming up here June 14th at the former Dollar Loan Center. I guess they had a name change. A lot of names change around here in Vegas over the years. Proud to be a part of that. We have more guests coming up in the next 2 weeks on that. Hour one in the books. Coming back, more on the life and legacy of Big Red, Bill Walton.